Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here back after, my goodness, 3 weeks away. This is, I think, the second time in all my years on the air that I've been away from the microphone for a three-week period.
Wow.
Yeah, and Lori and Bill with us today. Lori Tynebrody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill is Boisenault's associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I have a few. You know, I played in a golf tournament in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. Part of it got rained out, unfortunately. But then 2 weeks in Orlando and riding a lot of roller coasters.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And walking and sometimes carrying a six-year-old.
Of
not
course.
A lot,
of
but
course.
A little, you know. Oh. Yeah. So,
anytime it's
feeling an ache or pain here or there.
Yeah, vacation can be tough sometimes.
It can be. You know, and those roller coaster rides, you know, they're supposed to be fun, but there's a lot of quick movements where your body has to react and you have to tighten your muscles quickly to keep from, you know, shimmying side to side or decelerating yourself. That's what makes them fun. But your muscles aren't used to contracting that rapidly.
Correct,
and it can
right.
create a lot of muscle soreness.
Yeah,
and then
yeah. you get banged around and you get banged around in that seat a little bit.
And, right, right. Yeah. And the walking really is key. You've got to wear good shoes. I know it's nice to wear your stylish sandals or you know, with their rhinestones or whatever, but it's better in the long run to wear some good shock absorptive shoes.
Yeah. And I did that.
And you're here today to tell us you're not feeling so bad. You don't have any shin splints or
back
pain or swollen knees or plantar fasciitis.
A little
exactly.
Achy here and there, but not too bad.
Yeah.
I'm actually feeling pretty well.
Yeah.
And we have some callers online who want to visit with you. So why don't we just go to the phones? And Jackie in Plymouth is up first. So let's go to Jackie.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if I can get some help this way. I have a pain that goes down my back of my leg and down the calf and into the heel. And the doctor keeps telling, or not, one doctor said that it was related to my knee having arthritis in it. But there's no pain around my knee at all. It's all in the muscle tissues. And when you press down on it, it hurts a lot in the muscle. And I think it's a sciatic nerve because my knee doesn't hurt at all.
Jackie, do you have pain above the knee? Up in the thigh area, or is it all in the calf to the heel?
Well, it was a little bit, increasingly, it's getting up in the thigh. I think it's just tightening up, but most of it's in the back and radiates down the side and then back down the calf. And right between the, there's that spot right between where, I think it's the ligament. Is it the ligament? Yeah, it's the ligament, between the ligament behind the knee. So it's the upper muscle and the lower one, but there it hurts.
Okay, well, you've got the hamstring behind in the back of the thigh, and then you have calf muscles down below the knee, and the you know, certainly knee problems, knee injuries, knee arthritis can cause pain that refers down below the knee. But what you're describing in the back of the leg and the calf down to the heel, and now if it's moving up in the back of the thigh a bit, that does sound like it could be involvement of the sciatic nerve. And do you have any back pain or pain in the buttock area?
No, but I know sometimes a piriformis can be something you won't notice
right.
and be pinching down on it, but I don't feel that. I just feel everything down in my right leg.
Okay. Any numbness or tingling with this at all?
No.
Okay, so that's good. You can have pain from nerve, but the big thing is, are you getting weakness or numbness or tingling, which tells you the nerve is getting more and more irritated. How long have you had this?
Well, it's increasingly gotten worse since I, it's been about 3 weeks now, but I know that I got off the bicycle, I was in exercise class, and I got off the bike, and then I felt, I got off the wrong way. So it probably was back in January.
Okay, all right. So it's been some months then. Well, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, I guess that would be my recommendation. They can examine your knee. They can examine your foot and ankle as well as your back and try to determine where are these symptoms coming from and then give you a good plan, a good program to follow to help get rid of it and then keep it from coming back again. But if you feel it's been around for months, time by itself probably isn't going to take care of it. And if it is a a nerve that is irritated somewhat. You know, there are certain exercises that can actually make it worse. But again, I think a good examination can help sort out what's coming from your back, what's coming from the hip, maybe piriformis, as well as what involvement your knee may have with this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, knee arthritis in the knee, primary knee arthritis, rarely produces calf pain or heel pain. Sometimes if your knee is hurting a lot and you change how you walk, you'll develop a secondary pain in your calf, but it's not, you don't have a pain-free knee. So okay. It seems unlikely that that's the primary cause of your problem.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Well, could I ask what kind of physical therapist I should look for? I mean, is it a sports physical therapist or what?
Yeah, I think a sports physical therapist, considering it sounds like you're fairly active, an orthopedic outpatient physical therapist should be able to examine you and provide you with the program. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a sports specialist, but you want an orthopedic outpatient physical therapist.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Sandy in Fountain City emailed us, has been diagnosed with significant arthritis of L4 and L5 and facet arthritis. She says, I'm going to the pain clinic on Thursday for an injection since I have suffered with constant low back pain for over a year. I'm willing to try this. Is it safe and effective?
Well, injections can be effective and they can be helpful as long as they are done in conjunction with a good rehabilitation program. The L4-5 is near the bottom of our low back area, the lumbar spine, and you have a disc that's kind of the cushion between the vertebra, and then you have two small facet joints behind the disc, more closer to the back of our back. And arthritis can happen there just like it can happen at the knee or the hip. And it can be very debilitating over time. And the fact that Sandy's had this for over a year, assuming that she has tried physical therapy in the past or other conservative methods, an injection can help get things jump-started. Wow. The hope would be if it's effective, then it will allow her to participate in a more active exercise program and a rehab program. So it's like some of the calls we've had in the past where they have a tendonitis and they get a cortisone injection. We've had some discussions about that the injection by itself can relieve pain, but the question is, what's going to keep them coming back again?
Sure.
And that's where the follow-up is really important.
And Gary in Milwaukee wonders if you're familiar with laser treatments for softening scar tissue, and if so, where is it available? Had a partial knee replacement 2.5 years ago. It didn't work. 6 months ago, had another complete knee replacement. Scar tissue from the earlier surgery made the second one more complicated, and I was forced to allow my knee to heal for 6 weeks without bending it, which doesn't sound right.
That doesn't sound right. There must have been some other complication with that second knee surgery, because typically the first and most important goal following a knee replacement is restoring your motion. So they rarely immobilize you without bending your knee for 6 weeks. The exception might be if there was a fracture at the time of the surgery. They may need to let a fracture heal, in which case I would probably go back to my physician in my area. You know, if there was a fracture, some complications, there may be some question about some of the other therapies that are used at this point in time. I am not familiar with anyone using laser, at least in the physical therapy community. There may be other healthcare providers, there may be chiropractors, there may be other physicians who utilize laser, but typically we don't use laser much in our practice. It's not a common adjunct that physical therapists use. The mainstay of our treatment is joint mobilization, therapeutic exercise, re-education about movement and posture and movement patterns, gait, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any research that shows that laser is effective in terms of softening up a scar. I mean, there may be some out there, but I'm not aware of it. But scar post-operatively can be a big problem. Some people scar more than others, and can really impact the flexibility and ability to use that limb. But you know, a lot of deep stretching and a lot of deep massage to try to work that scar, along with the joint mobilization, generally is the best bet to stretch it out to where that leg can be functional. functional.
Yeah, he said he only had 70 degrees of knee flexion, which is pretty debilitating. You really have to be past 90 to have normal function in your gait and daily activities, and even that is a pretty minimum. So at 70 degrees, 6 months out, he still has a chance to remodel. You know, the knee, then that scar tissue will remodel for a year or two following surgery, so he shouldn't give up yet.
Let's turn to Chris in Waukesha next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, about 9 months ago, well, first of all, I'm 43 years old, and I don't have any health insurance, but about 9 months ago, I got out of bed. As I was getting out of bed with my one leg, putting it on the floor, my knee seemed like it had collapsed, and I fell down on the floor in pain, screaming, just literally like a sack of potatoes, just boom.
Hmm.
And I crawled back into bed and laid there. Next day, there was a little bit of swollenness, and ever since then, I would have a really bad pain in the back of my knee. This was in the winter, well, towards the winter when it happened, so I wasn't active as far as running, going outside, running as much. And towards the springtime, I started running, did squats, and the pain went away. Now, this was in my right knee, and 30 years ago, I blew out my left knee in a track. And again, I think I was told at that time ligaments were torn. And ever since then, when I'm walking, if I walk the wrong way, it seems like my knee is separating and it twists. And then, so I have problems in both knees. And my question to you is, now it seems like when I'm active, when I'm doing things, I don't have as many problems. When I'm inactive, that's when the pain comes. Now, is this something that I'm going to be, as I get older, is it something that I'm going to have problems with in my 50s and 60s? And is it something that can ever be fixed?
Oh, my goodness. What good questions. So trying to speculate what's going on with your knees, sounds like the one on your left knee that happened 20 to 30 years ago, you probably tore one of your cruciate ligaments. The most commonly torn cruciate ligament is your anterior cruciate. And if you place your knee just right, it feels unstable. It wobbles. You get some rotational instability.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you may have done the same thing on your right side when you got out of bed. Although it seems like it's a fairly innocuous injury, I've seen it happen often. And it could be that your anatomy, that you have a congenitally small notch in your knee that your cruciates pass through, and you caught it just right when you got out of bed and tore it. So, that's a possibility. It could be a possibility you tore your meniscus. But yes, being active is going to be helpful, but I would avoid the impact sports. I wouldn't be running. I wouldn't be doing tennis and basketball. I'd be biking, swimming, and weight training.
Okay.
Are you likely to have problems down the road? The literature would suggest that you're in a higher risk category, that people with cruciate deficient knees tend to develop arthritis at a faster rate than other people do, but not everybody does. So there's still some genetic variables that come into play that could be in your favor. So what you need to do is keep your weight down, that you don't excessively load your knee. You need to keep your legs strong, your quadriceps, your hip muscles, your glutes, your low back. Keep your core strong so that you can offload your knees to some extent. Make sure you're wearing good supportive shoes in whatever you do. And again, I'd stay out of impact sports if your goal is to increase the longevity of your knee joint.
Okay.
And the other question is I'm a waiter, so I stand on my feet.
Oh.
Lately it hasn't been a problem, but like last year when it did happen, I was at work, and I would have this severe pain through my leg. Now, is this something that I should probably look at towards maybe surgery in the future, or?
Well, first of all, you need to get the right diagnosis. So you'd have to go in, you'd have to see a physician, you'd have to have an MRI. So, you know, you have to sort of think about those costs and then surgery. There are a number of people who do well without surgery, who can cope with it by increasing their muscle strength and their muscle coordination so that they don't have episodes of instability. There are people who are non-copers, who don't cope well and go on to have surgery. We're not sure whether or not actually having surgery decreases your risk of arthritis down the road. The jury is still out on that. So there would be no guarantee if you went in and stabilized your knee that it would slow or stop the progression of arthritis.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, it's a risk benefit. You can certainly go in and get an opinion. Someone should be able to tell just from a clinical exam whether your cruciates are intact and give you some information. And at that point, you can always opt out of the system at any point. You can say, I don't want an MRI.
Yeah, there you have it. Good luck. So, thank you very much for calling. Yep. Appreciate your call. We have more callers on, lots of callers, as a matter of fact. Let's go to Jill in Milwaukee next. Jill, hello.
Good morning. I developed trigger finger a few months ago, both hands and the middle finger, and it's really bothersome. I'm trying to stretch it out, and that's not really working for me, and it's bad enough that it wakes me up in the middle of the night, and I'm just wondering if cortisone shots are the way I have to go or if there's something else that can take care of this.
Okay.
Have you seen a hand therapist at all?
I have not.
I'd start with that before I go to any cortisone injections or anything, any other interventions. They can be successfully treated. There are splints and braces that can help with that. It can help decrease your pain. Stretching is not going to be the key at this point.
Oh.
Just because of the mechanism of the extensor hood in your finger, the way it works and causes that trigger finger. So I would start out by seeing a certified hand specialist. There are physical therapists who are certified hand specialists. There are occupational therapists who are certified hand specialists. But you should be able to find someone in your area. Get your finger looked at and looked at by an expert. Your hands are too valuable, and the anatomy and the biomechanics of your fingers are too intricate to just try to self-manage this problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And I also have Morton's neuroma, which kind of feels like the same thing. Are they at all related or similar?
No.
Okay.
All right.
But it could be a sign of a connective tissue, like a systemic genetic connective tissue issue where you have a tendency to develop weaknesses in your connective tissue.
Yeah.
That'd be the only association I could muster.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, one of our guests today, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Our guest as we talk aches and pains here with Rachel Owens. Answering the phones today, our on-air producer, I'm Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net as we talk about aches, pains, sprains, and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Thank you much for listening in. And join in if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And actually, we got an email from Andrew, said I had an ACL replaced using a cadaver tendon. Will this ever become my own tissue, so to speak?
Well, I believe if you looked at the hospital bill, you own that tissue now.
That's
Andrew.
Right. Forever and ever. Yes.
It's yours. Yeah. your body will incorporate it. It will gradually, over time, transition from a tendon, it's usually a piece of tendon, into a ligament. It will ligamentize, so to speak. And it's yours. It's a connective tissue. Your body will incorporate it. It will modify it and mold it based upon the loads and stuff you place on it. But But yeah, it's yours.
Yeah, similar as other bones, mm-hmm. the same way. They use cadaver bone for certain mm-hmm. procedures, and it kind of forms a framework for your body to its own tissue to grow into it mm-hmm. over time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually had some cadaver bone marrow on a finger. I inserted into a finger at one point, too.
Right. Yeah.
Feels like my own.
Yeah.
It feels like your own, and you've paid for it. It's yours.
Exactly, exactly. Now you're not playing the piano any better, are you?
No. Jim and Madison will turn to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Ligamentize?
Ligamentize, yeah.
Okay, that's a new one to me.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital in October with kidney failure, and that may not be related, but when I got home from the hospital, about 2 weeks later, I started feeling a pain in my fingers, my pinky and my ring finger on my left hand, but also symmetrically on the other side, but most painful on the left side. And I don't know how it came to be, but if you ever hit your funny bone, you know how your fingers will tingle a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's probably from that same nerve down by the elbow that may be the related to this. But it's not getting any better. And my doctor's giving me gabapentin for the nerve pain. It's not working that well. And although it may seem trivial to some folks, I can no longer play piano or guitar, which I've been doing for 40 years. So it's a...
Wow, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm.
It's a loss for me. Yeah. And I'm a little ticked off, you know. I don't know at what or who, but, you know, what's the prognosis? I mean, how long will this ever come back to normal? You know, I do some... You know, stretching with my making fisticuffs and rubbing it so it like stimulates the area there. That seems like the right thing to do. I'm not sure. My doctor was rather mute, but
So, Jim, have you been told why it started? What's the cause of it?
No.
Along the way? Okay. Well, what you described is kind of related to the funny bone up by our elbow. And so the question would be, is a nerve irritated, one, where it crosses the wrist, or two, up by the elbow, by our funny bone, or three, the neck? And anytime anybody has kind of a symmetrical or similar pattern mm-hmm. From one hand to the other or one foot versus the other, you always need to think spine.
Fine.
And so... I guess what I would recommend is if you go see a physical therapist, if you can arrange that, and have them, they should examine your neck as well as both arms and try to figure out where is the irritation occurring. And there are some certain types of stretches and exercises to help improve mobility of nerve tissue that can go along with the symptoms that you have. But that's what I would recommend. It sounds like the things you've done locally with the massage and stretching, that was a logical place to start. Mm-hmm. And so that makes me think the problem may be up a little higher, up in the elbow or maybe even up in your neck.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It could have been how you were positioned when you were in the hospital.
That's what I'm thinking too, perhaps.
Yeah.
But how long will this last?
It depends upon if there's still pressure on those nerve roots. So as Bill said, if, for example, it's coming from your spine and you have some underlying degenerative joint disease or disc disease in your spine that got irritated at the time you were in the hospital, you may need some intervention or some therapy to relieve some of that pressure to allow the nerve to heal. But it may be that there's sort of a self-perpetuating cycle of inflammation going on that needs to be broken by some specific intervention, and then it should recover.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
What type of intervention are we describing?
Sometimes we do some traction, which again just gives the nerves a little more space available, and again increases blood flow. We do a lot with posture. So if the problem is coming from your neck, I end up doing a lot of mobilizing and stretching for upper back and shoulder area, so the neck is better aligned. And then looking at strengthening, some of the deep neck muscles can get weak over time, and again that allows your neck to fall into a certain posture. And then certainly I would talk to you and look at the posture and positions you're in when you're playing. Playing guitar and other instruments to see if there's anything we could do there from an alignment perspective as well. So even though I'm having them kind of focus at your elbow and your neck, they would want to look at your upper back and shoulder area for strength and flexibility as well.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, Jim. And we'll take more calls here. Rick and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Memorial Day weekend, I bruised my heel by an impact. I was wearing sandals, and basically when I landed instead of on the ball of the foot, directly on the heel. It was my right heel, more towards the outside of the heel. Went in Sunday morning, thought I broke my foot because the sucker hurt so bad. X-rayed it, no crack, but he said it's bruised. And he said basically rest it, and it should come back. My question is, how long does a bruise take, and does a bruised heel really take to heal? Mm-hmm. I walk for a living, and luckily the next couple weeks I'm not walking as much, but I recently quit smoking 3 months ago and got into running, and this is driving me nuts not being able to do that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Heels are very difficult. You have a fat pad that goes over your heel, and they tend to be notorious for taking a long time to heal, pardon the pun, probably because they never get to rest. I mean, you're walking, and your weight-bearing and all of your weight is coming down on them. So, you know, it can take weeks for it to recover. It can take even longer than that for it to fully recover, depending upon a whole host of other factors. Stopping smoking is a very good thing because the increased blood flow will assist with healing anywhere in your body. Second of all, really good shock-absorptive shoes. Third, there are shock-absorptive inserts that you can get. There are heel cups that provide extra cushion for your heel. So I would have you get those and put them in both shoes because they sometimes have a little bit of elevation to them, and I wouldn't want you lopsided. So I would do that. If you're still unable to walk or run for exercise, I would get on a bike. I'd get in a pool if you can. It's summertime now. You can maybe find an outdoor pool and do some deep water running.
The bike will be more apt to get used than going into the pool because I have a 10-year-old daughter that would love for us to go. But it's just driving me nuts because, you know, 3 months ago I quit smoking. I dropped 30 pounds running and everything feel fantastic. And then this injury happens and it feels good for a couple days of, you know, just light, moderate walking to and fro. Mm-hmm. But then it's like I just kind of maybe run 5 feet to see how it feels. It's like, oh, yep, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you do your walking or your walking, running, whatever, do it on a dirt path or on a track that has cushion. Mm-hmm. And try to increase the speed of your walking. I mean, people who walk fast, who are race walkers for exercise, really burn a lot of calories without as much impact. So that might be an intermediate step between your walking and your running. And then filling in with the bike. And then I would ice when I was done. I'd put ice on it, a little ice massage with a paper cup you stick in the freezer and just take it out and massage around it just to cool it back down when you're done.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. Good luck.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Rick, for calling. Appreciate it. And Ellen in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Ellen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have got a multitude of problems. I'm not a young person. I'm going to be 70 next year, and I just keep getting shorter. 4'11" now. I seem to have a lot of disc problems in my back. It's been MRI'd and everything, and I do have some stenosis in my lower back, and I have been getting treatments from a pain clinic. I've had a radio frequency ablation. I do press ups for my low back several times a day. I also was trying to do, I was doing a ball, and that wasn't working at all because it hurt my hips so badly, to try and do pull-ups on the ball, you know. So I decided, okay, I'll use the floor, and I went to pelvic tilts. Still, my hips, the pain in my hip was really bad. I'm looking for something I could do for my front to help my back.
You bet, you bet. Yeah, the muscles in the front are very important, and they're definitely connected anatomically to our backs. The so, do you have access to a pool by chance? Okay.
And I don't even swim.
Okay. Well, I'm not so much thinking about swimming. I'm just thinking with the disc problems you described and with the
I know I have sciatic pain in both hips that okay. I'm aggravating with the stenosis and then trying to do something for the front that, you know, doesn't involve
right.
irritating yeah. my, you know, irritating my hips.
Okay. All right. Well, again, if you don't have access to water anywhere, I mean, because to me that would be your best bet. If there's a physical therapy department that has a pool or a clinic that has a pool that you could use, the buoyancy of the water would take a lot of pressure off your back and your hips and would allow you to do a lot more strengthening than you're currently tolerating in terms of your land-based program.
Mm-hmm.
And the pool wouldn't necessarily be forever, although sounds like with your history, it would be a good place for you to be spending quite a bit of time exercising. But if you can get access to the pool with a good strengthening program in the water and some gentle flexibility, the hope would be then you would tolerate more and more of a land-based program.
Well, I would hope so. You know, I'm losing strength because...
You bet. Yeah, if you're not able to be very active, you can't do the strengthening, or if the strengthening is causing pain, you're not going to get any gains from the activity.
Yeah, I'm losing a lot of strength, and I don't like that at all. You know, I'm losing strength, I'm losing balance, I'm losing a lot of things that I know are very important, especially when I'm going to be 70 years older.
Right. I spent a lot of time in the pool, and it's amazing. Without swimming, you don't have mm-hmm. to swim. You
That's
run
right.
in place, and get a pretty good workout.
Well, it's the combination. You get mm-hmm. good conditioning and, mm-hmm. and the strengthening on top of that. And you can mm-hmm. do balance work in the pool. And, you know, Ellen, if you haven't called, I'm not sure exactly where you are location-wise and what's available.
Milwaukee.
There's hospitals that have, in their department,
yep.
have pools. There's private practices that have pools. So that's what I would explore and find a place that's easy for you to get to and from. And a therapist should be able to search about a good program.
You know, I'm not inactive by any means. Before I started talking to you today, I was out digging in my garden. And yeah. I want to be able to continue to do that until I die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, then you need to keep working with a therapist who can help you find the right set of exercises. So you tried a ball, didn't work for you. So you go back and you say, okay, I tried the ball, it didn't work for me. What else you got? And they will keep working with you, particularly as you change over time. And hopefully that person can help direct you to a pool that might be a place where you can have long-term exercise to maintain your strength and your overall health and condition. And once you get into a routine and you find a place where you can exercise, it can be part of your lifestyle.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Ellen. Appreciate your call. And we'll take more calls here. Matthew and Cashton up next. Matthew, hello.
Hello, yes. I've got a question for your guest here. My father's little over 2 years ago had double knee replacement surgery.
Okay.
And after the surgery, he'd lost a lot of feeling in his middle ring and pinky finger of his right hand. They told him it was something to do with the nerve that goes over your elbow, so they did surgery on that to move the nerve to take the pressure off it. And after they did the surgery, it got worse. Now those three fingers are completely numb, and he's got no strength left in them at all. I was just wondering if there's anything we could do to try to fix it.
Yeah.
Has he seen a physical therapist? Do you know Matthew?
Yes, he has, and he doesn't get to get there very often because it's all he lives out in the sticks. And,
okay. All
but
right.
He gave him stuff to do, like squeezing those hand things to try getting strength back in it, but it doesn't do a lot of good when you can't feel whether you're doing it or not.
Yeah, yeah, no, agreed. You know, I would think with that kind of a history, you would want to be doing quite a bit of manual therapy, massage around the scar and above and below the scar, just to try to promote that nerve gliding a little more effectively. And there are some very specific stretches isn't quite the right word, but the way to gently mobilize the nerve to get it to promote movement. But with the surgery and the length of time, he would want some manual therapy done to that elbow area and arm area to help his exercise to be a little more effective for him. If that has not been tried with the therapist, then I'd recommend him trying to find a physical therapist that is expertise in manual therapy. You can call or he can call the local hospital department or clinic in the area and ask for somebody who's got specific expertise in that area.
I'm wondering if they were directing their treatment at the right area,
given
that he got worse after they moved the nerve. And I'm wondering if actually he's having problems farther up in his neck and if that's been looked at and addressed.
Yeah.
Well, he had a lot of trouble with his knees. That's why he had the knee replacement. And since then, he hasn't had any trouble with his back or anything like that. It's just all of a sudden his hands numb.
Right. But I wonder if at the time of surgery, if the position of his neck when he was intubated for his surgery stirred something
intubated.
Up.
They actually watched him do it.
Okay. Well.
They did the thing where they make you numb from the chest down.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, but Lori's right. The fact that it hasn't gone away and then led to the surgery and he sounds like he's worse, not better. I mean, I would want to explore every possibility. And so most obvious is the scar tissue locally, but tying into what can impact the nerves going out to our hands and elbow area is the neck. And so that should be examined as well.
All right.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jane and Brown Deer, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm calling about my right foot. On the inside of my foot, right above my arch, but not my arch, and not on the top of it, but right in the middle of that, right after that little bone that you feel, right in front of that little bone that you feel, I have a pain there that sometimes wakes me up at night. When I walk, it feels a lot better, but it hurts a lot. Off and on during the day, and if I move my foot a lot, that will make it stop. But I'm wondering what it is and what I can do about it.
It's in the middle of your arch?
It's on the inside of my foot, on the side of my foot,
right
over my arch, but not on my arch.
Okay, so it's not, when you say it's not on my arch, it's not underneath,
no,
it's on the side.
No, not underneath
okay.
at all, it's on the
but it'd
side.
Be kind of at the apex of the arch.
Yeah.
Okay, and how long has it been going on?
Oh, quite a while.
Quite a while being days, weeks, or months?
Months.
Or years, months, okay. And any idea what set it off?
No, I do a lot of walking, I do a lot of exercise.
Okay.
And I don't know. Somebody told me it was plantar fasciitis, but it's not in the right place for that, is it?
That is correct. You are well-educated, Jane. No, it's not in the right place for plantar fasciitis. There's most likely some arthritis in those bones in your midfoot. It's unlikely to be a stress fracture. I'm trying to think of what are the other possibilities in the middle of your arch. You know, certainly your plantar fascia extends there, but where you're reporting your pain is nowhere near your plantar fasciitis. So, and the fact that it bothers you during the night and feels better or okay when you're moving would suggest more of an arthritis kind of situation.
Okay. Is there something you can do about it?
Well, before I go to bed, I do some stretching to loosen up my foot. But typically what happens is you're immobile during the night and you don't move. And those joint surfaces that are arthritic prefer to move. They don't like to be stationary. And so then they start to ache during the night. You could try taking, if you're able, an anti-inflammatory like an Aleve or something before bed and see if that helps you get through the night.
Well, it doesn't bother me that much, and I don't particularly like to take a lot of medicine.
Okay.
So if I just move my foot around, it usually quits. But.
Yeah. I'm guessing the most likely culprit in the differential list would be some arthritis in your midfoot.
Yeah. Okay. Jane, do you have pretty flat feet, or do you have a pretty high arch?
No, I have a very high arch.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have you tried an arch support of any kind?
I do have an orthotic in my foot, but it's not an arch support. It's just an orthotic that was supposed to be... keep my knees straight or
Yeah, okay. When was the last time you had that orthotic looked at, or when was it given to you?
Oh, I've had it now a couple of years.
Okay. You know, it might be worthwhile going in and seeing a therapist or an orthotist, whoever you receive this orthotic from, and have them reexamine your foot. Our feet change as we age, and what might have fit you very well a couple of years ago may not be fitting you quite as well. And again, where you're describing the pain that Lori said, kind of in the mid part of the foot, that's where we need some good support. And the orthotic may not be doing its job for you anymore.
And it's a half orthotic, which I guess they don't do those as much anymore, is that?
Yeah, does it go down to the ball of your foot?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's really there to control your heel and
right.
heel
mm-hmm.
position. Yeah, again, that would also be something else to consider, mm-hmm. an orthotic that extends down more toward the ball of your foot
mm-hmm.
as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Good luck.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
You
thanks.
Bet. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains, and recovering from them today with Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. More emails as we talk about those aches and pains. This one from Catherine in Wausau, Lori and Bill, and Catherine says, I'm needing to replace my walking shoes. I'm thinking about starting to run again. Can I buy a good quality running shoe like Nike Shox and also wear them on my walking days? Or would this be asking for trouble with my feet and knees?
That should work. You should be able to buy a good running shoe and walk in it. I don't know that I would go the other direction. I wouldn't buy a walking shoe and try to run in it, right. but I think you can get a good running shoe and be just fine to walk in that. And I would start off doing a walk-run kind of thing, not just, okay, today I'm going to run and run the same distance mm-hmm. you usually walk. But I'd mix it up, going that same route that she always walked, but then adding running for some sort of interval, a 1-to-1 interval or a 2-to-1 interval.
She's wondering also if you're familiar with the style of walking shoes that claim to shape or tone you better, such as Skechers shape-ups. Familiar with those? Do you think they actually work your leg muscles in a better way for walking?
I haven't seen any research to show that there's any different muscle activation with those. I've had anecdotal reports where people say that, oh, I feel it so much better when I wear these shoes, and that's fine. But I think people need to find the shoe that fits their foot and works for their foot. It should have a good solid heel counter around the back to control your heel motion, and it should flex easily at the forefoot where your foot normally bends. A shoe that's really stiff and doesn't bend is going to give you Achilles problems. So get a shoe, and everyone finds a brand or a style that seems to work for them.
Yeah, if you're dramatically changing shoe style that alters the way you walk or muscles supposedly work, you know, again, like Lori just described, you want to transition your activity mm-hmm. level. If you are walking at the same speed, same distance, and you change footwear, you potentially set yourself up for some irritation and some problems.
Let's turn to Dennis in Afton, Minnesota next. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks, Larry, Lauren, Bill. You've been helpful to myself and fellow tennis players over time. But this time, I think something occurred probably on the volleyball court, playing in the sand court barefoot. Mm-hmm. And what I've got now on my right foot is an awareness that comes and goes. It started about a year ago after playing. Between the toes and around, kind of around the joints of the two toes. And sometimes I'm aware of it up on top and down in the bottom of the foot as well. And last Sunday, I played a fair amount of tennis, and I kind of came off kind of light-footed on that foot. And I'm trying to see if I can think about how I can make that go away.
So it's a pain in the ball of your foot?
Well, it's kind of in between the toes, concentrated up probably behind the joints up on the top, but right in between. And then I've been massaging it, and then it goes away, and I'm not aware of it. But you know, it's kind of there all the time, but not. And then also, like say, down low towards my body instead of towards the tips of toes, kind of back, but it's in the joint area.
So it's in the joints of your toes and the ball of your foot.
It's mainly right in between.
In between.
It could be, I don't know if it's ligaments or what it is. I've iced it over a few times, and that helped. It, like I say, it almost goes away, but if I thought about it, is it there or not, it's still kind of there. And now it's there a little bit more because I played some pretty aggressive kennels.
Okay. And you're not getting any numbness or tingling?
No.
Okay. Because neuromas are the common thing there. But you can also have some problems with that arch. There's an arch that goes through the ball of your foot, and it may like more support than a barefoot kind of activity gives you. And when you play sand volleyball, you spend time up on your toes, and you're doing a lot of weight bearing on that joint. And it really wasn't designed to bear your weight without a shoe or some kind of support on. So I'm guessing you've got some overuse in that arch. It could be in some of the ligaments, as you suggested, that run between each of those joints that kind of bind those together. Mm-hmm. You could have a little arthritis in those joints that get stirred up when you're putting all of your weight on them. So I just make sure if you're going to continue to be a sand volleyball player to probably ice your foot afterwards, and then for the next few days make sure you're wearing good shoes with good arch supports.
What about wearing shoes during the play?
Well, if you can, absolutely.
In the sand. So yeah. That brings up another topic I heard over public radio about 3-4 weeks ago. They're talking about the Kenyan runners, because you were talking about shoes, and they run barefoot. And they're saying now that they're designing a shoe that assimilates running barefoot, they're saying that it greatly increases the elasticity in your feet, and that the Kenyans hardly touch the ground when they run. They spring off of their step. Now, I'm wondering, I've been thinking maybe a self-remedy might be to go barefoot around the yard in the grass a little bit and to, you know, get the balance, get the total foot exercise more. I'm not sure if that'd be a good thing or not.
Yeah, I think with what Lori's described, and with the fact that it started with the sand volleyball, I probably wouldn't recommend that at the moment.
Okay.
You know, if you completely recover from this, you know, it sounds like it's been a long time, over a year ago, that you've had this.
Right.
I probably wouldn't be recommending more barefoot activity at this point in time. Like a good foot support will probably do you better, Dennis. And
okay.
Have you seen anybody for this over the last year?
Anything? No, I haven't.
Yeah, also the fact that it has been a year and it sounds like it's getting a little worse, not better, and as active as it sounds like you are, might not be a bad idea to go in and have your foot and lower limb examined, bring your shoes in there that you play tennis in or you run or walk in along with you, and see if somebody can help sort this out for you. One, what is the cause, and two, what can you do about it to help get rid of this completely for yourself?
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up the Kenyan. I think we talked about this on the last show. My sister was here. Bill wasn't here, but someone else brought up the issue of the Kenyan runners. And, you know, people love to jump on the bandwagon into these things. You have to remember that that's only one variable in the whole complete history of people running and walking. They come from a different culture, different genetic anatomy, different connective tissue, and their culture is more of a barefoot. They don't have pavement. They don't drive everywhere. So there's many, many more variables. I think there's certainly something to be gleaned from that and learned from it, but for us to embrace that kind of training wholesale is going to enhance our business,
yes,
I guess.
It will, yes. Yeah.
Well, I had the good fortune of growing up going barefoot until I went to grade school.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm thinking this through. I greatly appreciate your help, and you got food for thought here.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Lois in Shell Lake, we're on to you. Hi, Lois.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I so appreciate the advice being given. I have been diagnosed with osteoarthritis for, give or minus 5 years.
Okay.
And what I've also have Harrington rods in my back from scoliosis. And when I had an MRI done to find out why I was hurting so bad, they couldn't be read unless I'd go to the next step and have the dye injected, which I didn't. And what I'm wondering is, and when I was a kid, 15, was involved in a very severe car accident, and my left buttock, that's where the arthritis kind of, whatever it did, it's decided to sit there. And it goes from that up into the left, right shoulder of my bod. And I'm wondering, I cannot seem to find any certified physical therapists in this small community that I live in, 1,200, or I can certainly go beyond, but I wondered, what can I do? I take a leave and whatever, but sometimes it takes so many that I'm worried about other parts of my body.
Yeah, yeah, worry about your stomach and your kidneys and other things too. So, Liz, have you seen a physical therapist in the last 5 years?
Yes.
You have? Okay. Mm-hmm. And have they given you a home program to work on?
Well,
exercises and educating you of how to bend, how to lift, how to move?
Well, yes and no, but very generalized.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you're not sure who to see in your community, if you're willing to leave some contact information, I'd be happy to contact you after the show today, either today or tomorrow, and I can help you find somebody that's a reasonable distance to you.
Okay.
Because it sounds like what you need is a kind of a comprehensive program, considering your history with the back and the arthritis and the fact that your hip and your shoulder and, you know, there's a lot of things that would need to be modified for you to be able to exercise effectively.
So Rachel Owens, who is our on-air producer, I'll put you on hold, and she'll get your contact information, and then Bill can get a hold of you after the show. And so we'll work it out that way, Lois. Thank you very much for calling. We'll put you on hold now, and Rachel will get to you. All right. Having lots of fun today. Unfortunately, there's a lot of pain here out there, too. But we're dealing with it. Lori and Bill, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boies and all will be our guests right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains and recovering from them today. Larry Mueller here, my guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boies and Alt, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. And if you'd like to join in with a question, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And let's call her. So let's go to Skip in Milton first. Skip, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having your guests on, Larry.
Sure.
I have two different foot issues. They're on different feet, but one happened several months ago, punting a football, my dog, who's a punt returner. And
is he playing for the Packers?
The Packers could use a good
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
We haven't signed him up for the Packers yet, but I used to be a punter in high school, so I know how to do it, but I just somehow get it too far out on my foot and hyperextended my foot or something. It's problems in the foot, and yet I don't think it's too serious because it didn't stop me from running my first ultra marathon about a month ago.
Okay.
And in fact, it got better the more I ran because it wasn't running that injured it, so it was something else. But it's still there. You know, I mean, I still feel it, and usually walking more is helps getting it loosened up more, but I just don't know why it's taking so long and if it's anything serious or, you know, that. So that's the one question about my right foot. Now, the left foot, I know just what happened there. Running a week ago Sunday on a trail, and I hit a stump with it was obscured by all the rain. The ferns and mayapples had fallen down over the trail, so I didn't see this short stump about 3 inches tall, but very solid. And I was running pretty fast at the time, at least 10 miles an hour, I would say, maybe 11 or 12. And I hit it just at the wrong point in the stride, my foot coming forward, probably double my speed, and just slammed into it, and I did a face plant. Didn't hurt anything else. I just got muddy, but it sure hurt my foot. But then when I stood up, it didn't hurt anymore. So I thought, well, that's a good sign. And then I tried walking. It didn't hurt anymore. Still hurt, but it didn't hurt anymore. So then I ran another 4 miles.
of course you did.
And it still didn't hurt anymore. Of course, I had the endorphins going and everything. But then it was swelled up and it looked real ugly, and then it swelled up so that the day after my toe was throbbing, I could feel my heart beating in my toe because there was blood that had swollen up like a huge blood blister. So I lanced that with my pocket knife, and instant relief, and a lot of fluid came out. But then, and I used antibiotic ointment because I'm concerned about an infection. But then when I finally, on Wednesday, I did see my doctor, he looked at it, he said, I think you broke it, mm-hmm. and an x-ray revealed he was right.
Mm-hmm.
It is near the end, and it's on the lateral side, near the end, of about an inch or so from what's sort of a slice on the edge of the great toe near
mm-hmm.
the end.
Mm-hmm.
And walking, as long as they use a fairly stiff-soled shoe or sandal, does, is fine.
Right.
And the doc said that's okay to do that, but he said not to run for at least a couple weeks, and he's going to look at it at 2 weeks from last Wednesday.
Okay.
But do you have any advice on, I don't want to overdo it, and biking seems to be okay, too. I've got some pretty stiff-soled bike shoes, so.
Okay. Yep, biking, deep water running would be the two big activities.
Mm-hmm.
Weight training, if you do any weight training, that would be fine. So
yeah.
I'd just mix it up. I'd look at it as an opportunity to get off your feet for a little bit and do some cross training.
Right.
So deep water running, deep water cross country skiing, those things will be good in combination with your biking.
And then a question, too, about I may be going in about 5 weeks on a backpacking trip. And would you think that that amount of time, like 6 or 7 weeks, my toe would be healed up? I know every toe, mm-hmm. every foot is different, but
in general,
do you think that's realistic?
Yeah, it should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the fact you're going in and back in 2 weeks to be re-examined, the mm-hmm. doc will look at it. Make sure you mention this backpacking trip to the physician, but typically bone will heal
mm-hmm.
within that time frame, especially if the joint wasn't involved, which mm-hmm. it doesn't sound like it was with the fracture.
The joint doesn't really hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't hyperextended my toe to, it's probably a little sore yet, but not noteworthy. It doesn't get worse when I walk, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, as long as the fracture doesn't extend into the joint, I think is kind of what Bill was saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then my other foot, the tendon thing or whatever it is, from punting the football, can it take weeks and weeks to heal?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem to be a big problem, but it's...
Sure. It can if you sprained it, and especially as active as you are. You didn't let it rest to heal, so you may have sprained it, may have a little instability there, and that may be just perpetuated by your running. It doesn't hurt. But since you're going back into your physician, have your physician take a look at that as well while you're in there and make sure you're not missing anything dramatic.
Yeah. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Skip. Appreciate it. And Greg in Green Bay, it is your turn.
Hey. I just got a question. I've got a varicose vein in my left thigh, inner thigh above the knee, and it is, I don't want to say knotted, but it is, it's a pretty twisted mess. And, I've had it looked at, through the past years. It's gotten worse. And last time I had it looked at, they did a ultrasound of the blood flow in it and came back saying it's not. Yeah, it should be removed, but, we wouldn't say it's to the point where we would say it has to be done and thereby insurance paying for it. And I'm not going to hide the fact that I can't imagine it wouldn't be something they would want to remove. So I'm just looking for a little insight on how could a vein that's so twisted and knotted be of any use anymore anyway? it's like I said, it's really twisted and knotted, and it's pretty protrudes out pretty far. I mean, people are like, whoa, what is that?
Yeah.
So I just, maybe just a little more insight. I mean, God love our doctors and everything, but there's never enough time to sit and have a chat with them to just pick their brains and see what they've really got to say about it. So I'm just curious what your insight on a vein like that would be.
Is it painful?
Yeah, once in a while it throbs. It's not killing me or anything, but on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 4 once in a while or 5. It throbs now and then.
Yeah. Yeah, because they can be very uncomfortable and for some people. And do we need every vein in our body? Probably not. They transfer veins. They move veins. I mean, that's the surgeon's skill that comes into play. I mean, they would make sure that there would be no significant tissue compromise. It's a fairly common procedure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, if your question is why aren't they doing it sooner, it's an elective procedure, and they wait until you come in and you say, I want it done. I can't stand this anymore, until the bad days are winning out over the good days. It's the same way with joint replacement surgeries, where surgeons aren't anxious and don't push people to have elective procedures. They'll only encourage people to have procedures when they feel like it's really in their best interest to do something now rather than later. But the vein issue is something that when it becomes enough of an annoyance to you that you want it done, then the surgeon will do it.
Well, I mean, you're saying that from a cosmetic perspective, but I mean, I guess my question is from a, what is this vein? Is this vein actually performing any function anymore at this point?
Probably some function. It's probably carrying some blood flow to your lower limb. Could you do without it? Probably. And when I gave my opinion, it wasn't just from a cosmetic point of view, it's from the medical point of view.
Okay.
So doctors don't like to operate on people unless people really want to have that done. So if you're having pain once in a while, that's at a 4. How much better is your pain going to be after surgery? I don't know. You're going to hurt for quite a while after surgery. Apparently, these surgeries are relatively painful. So they don't want patients coming back and saying, well, geez, it hurts a lot worse now. I should have never had it done.
Yeah, there's like about a 2-week downtime is what I'm told.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable for a while after that. So they want to make sure that you are ready to have it done.
Could I have one more quick one here, and I'll speak quickly. if I've got an ankle, arthritic ankles, and one of my ankles, for lack of a better term, it kind of locks up now and again on me.
Mm-hmm.
It happened one time. I was just watching TV, sitting in a chair, and I just kind of twisted my ankle, and all of a sudden I was like, couldn't move it. I'm like, whoa.
Yep.
And it's happened to me in the past, and I kind of can roll it and twist it, and so I feel a little bit of a pop, and boom, it's good.
Yep.
And I had an MRI done on it, and the orthopedist came back and said, you know, you get you've got a fair amount of foreign bodies, though, that are floating in your ankle.
Yep.
Bone chips. And I'm thinking, is that what's causing this thing to lock up now and again, or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, it could be, but until we got in and operated, we couldn't say for sure. And I guess I'm kind of like, well, what else would it be? I mean,
that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more than likely what it is. But again, they're not going to come in and say, oh, yeah, that's it. Because when they get in there, there could be a flap that doesn't necessarily show up on an MRI, depending upon how they took their slices on the MRI. For example, something that's called an osteochondral defect. You can have some arthritis that extends down into the bone. Depending upon how they slice their MRI, they may or may not pick that up. So it could be some other kind of tissue or pathology in your ankle that's causing it to lock. But the odds are with the loose bodies getting caught somewhere in your joint.
I mean, you're talking how big of a loose body? Tiny size kind of thing?
It can be very small. It depends upon the position your ankle's in. But when your ankle's in a what we call the tightest or the most close-packed position, there's not much room in your joint for other stuff to be moving around, and it can get caught in there. And should you have surgery on that? I'd have surgery on this probably before I did on my varicose veins, because having those loose bodies floating around will chew up your joint surfaces.
You know, I'm just kidding.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Greg, for calling. And let's turn to Gene in Menominee, who's been waiting a while here. Gene, hello.
Hi. It was like a year in April. I did something silly and sprained my ankle very, very bad. It should have broken, but it's a weak ankle. I've sprained it a lot. And now it's been sore for a year, and I went back after a year and saw the orthopedist. And he said that I still had a bone bruise, because the two bones from the leg and the foot come together.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a bone bruise there,
mm-hmm.
and that's why it hurts and why it clicks and locks up. And I'm like, a year later?
Yes.
And now, and also, in the MRI, there was a small piece of, like, probably cartilage hanging off the side of my ankle, which they just kind of ignored. And I have had problems with my foot ever since. It continues to swell, and now I think I have tendonitis.
It's hard to say. It depends upon where that piece of cartilage is. Do you know which bone the piece of cartilage is from?
Right on the outside of my ankle.
On the outside. It's not in your ankle joint itself, but it's on the outside?
In the MRI that I saw, it looked like it was on the outside.
Okay. Well, it'd be useful to have a little more information about that. Have you had any therapy?
I went through two rounds of physical therapy. And the more exercise I did, the more painful it got, the more it swelled.
Well, something is amiss, because a year later it shouldn't be swelling. It's not that unusual. I shouldn't say it that way. You can have a bone bruise a year later. We're just learning more about bone bruises now. We didn't know about bone bruises until we had MRIs. There are many kinds of injuries that produce a bone bruise. Most of them resolve anywhere between 3 and 6 months, although some hang on longer, and they're probably a sign of some sort of defect, bony, arthritic kind of damage to the joint, but we still don't know for sure. But the fact that you still have a bone bruise, you're still getting swelling and still having a lot of pain a year later, I'd probably seek another opinion and have my ankle reevaluated by somebody else.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Gene. Kim and Cameron emailed and said, I injured the top of my foot about 20, 25 years ago. No broken bones then. At the time, no therapy was suggested or provided other than wait for it to heal. In the past few weeks, it's begun to hurt again in the same area, typically after I've been sitting, and it goes away when I've walked a few steps usually. Is this arthritis related to the prior injury or possibly something else? Is there something to be done?
Well, the question would be why it started hurting now, you know, after 20 to 25 years, why one foot hurts and doesn't the other. So one would think with your feet, unless you're maybe a soccer player and kicking more with one foot, you know, it is World Cup time, that you should be having similar kinds of symptoms in both feet because your feet are doing the same kinds of things. So the fact that it showed up in one, where she had this previous injury but not the other, would suggest that it could be related to something that happened 20 to 25 years ago. She may have had a sprain in her midfoot, and if there is continued instability there, it can accelerate arthritis there. The pattern of symptoms she describes are similar to a pattern for arthritis, where they don't like to be still. It hurts when you're immobile, and when you start to move, it feels better. So is there something she could do? Certainly, I would go in, see a physical therapist, have it evaluated, see if there's any mobility issues, strengthening issues, stretching issues, shoe wear issues, posture issues that are amenable to treatment. Because if it is arthritis, it's not going to get better. It'll probably get worse before it gets better. So this would be the time to intervene and have it looked at and get on the right track.
Yeah, and they can try to figure out, so why did it begin the last few weeks? If there was no injury or trauma, or was there a change in activity level, or maybe she bought new shoes or different kinds of shoes that set her up for this to happen, that's what the therapist can help sort out.
And Maya emailed us, I've had two injections of a therapeutic mixture of lidocaine and Depo-Medrol, I think, for a severe spinal stenosis at L3-4. The injections were last August and October and effectively relieved the most severe pain, some burning down the front of my leg, weakness and imbalance, as well as some buttock or hip pain, pinching still near with use, like weeding and that sort of thing. Is another injection advisable, or should I accept the somewhat debilitating situation, what are the side effects of injections? It's Mary and Stephen's point. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, the fact that the injections help with the most severe pain is a good thing. And that's usually what has to go away first before any of the neurological complaints can go away, the tingling and the burning. But burning, it's still usually suggestive of nerve irritation or nerve pain. The physicians that we're closely with here in town, they don't like to do any more than two, maybe three injections within a specified time frame. And so she got a combination of kind of a Novocaine-like medication and a steroid. Similar to the discussion we had earlier today, if she has not seen a physical therapist along with the injections, there are certain types of exercise to promote nerve mobility and the strengthening. And it sounds like her balance also is an issue. And as active as she sounds like she is with the gardening and things, if she hasn't seen a physical therapist since that last injection, she should see one before a third one is considered.
Okay. Mark in Decorah, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I have a question regarding shin splints. I'm about 30, and I guess I regard myself in fairly good health. And this spring, I started a running regimen and was fine with it, but up until about 6-8 weeks ago, I started getting shin splints, and I let it heal for a couple weeks, and I get them right back again. Is there some type of warm-up I can do or change in diet or anything that would decrease my odds of getting shin splints?
Well, the first thing that I'd look at if you were in my clinic is your foot posture, because people who are flat-footed tend to have more problems with shin splints than other people. And I'm thinking of shin splints. I'm defining it as medial tibial stress syndrome, which is the new title for it. There are other things that, like compartment syndrome and tendinopathies and so on, that can also be called shin splints. But the garden variety, the one that most people refer to, is that pain down in the inside of your shin, in the bottom third of your shin. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. So if you're flat-footed, you're going to be more predisposed to that, so I would get some arch supports. Most of the higher-end, like REI and other athletic stores, carry a little bit higher-end arch support. I would do that. I would work on stretching my calves, both with my knee straight and, most importantly, with my knee bent, because newer research is thinking that it's not related to your muscle called your posterior tibialis, but actually your soleus. So I do a lot of good stretching of my calf muscles. I would run on a track or a dirt trail that's more shock absorptive rather than on the hard pavement. And I would work my way back into it gradually, mixing up running and walking with some biking, swimming, or other alternative activities. I would also do some training in toe raises, raising up on both feet and down with one, alternating sides. Do some strengthening for my calves. And when I was done running, I would ice my shins. And if I'm not getting anywhere, I'd go see a physical therapist.
Yeah, it tends not to go away very quickly.
Yeah.
And so Lori's idea of transitioning and cross-training and slowly resuming getting back to normal activity over a period, maybe even a couple months, may be necessary.
Yeah.
What do you do about Charlie horses, severe Charlie horses in the legs at night, someone wonders? What can be done about that?
Yeah, it can be very painful and very difficult to get relief from. The question is, why are they happening? And when I get concerned about it, if it starts happening more nights than not, and more often at night, sometimes it can be related to just excessive activity, unusual activity, and the muscles, you're paying a price for it. But usually that goes away within a night or two. So if this is happening multiple nights and going on for more than a few weeks, I'd go see a physician and have them sort it out, because there can be multiple causes, vascular, neurologic causes, kidney problems. There's all kinds of things that can cause these very painful muscle cramping.
So what would be a regular, I mean, if it's happening a lot, like three times a week or?
Yeah, if it's happening more than a month ago and it's getting harder and harder to stretch out when it comes on, I would say more than a few weeks. And if it's getting worse, I'd go ahead and see their physician.
All right. And with that, we are about finished here. Boy, you've answered lots of questions today. Thank you so much.
Lots of questions, but there's more out there. We'll be back next month. I'm sure we'll be answering more. July 12th.
I have you for July 12th.
Well, July 12th.
I do too.
Oh, you do? Okay.
All right. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School, will be back on July 12th. And after being gone for 3 weeks, I'm gone again tomorrow, but only for one day. And John Munson will be filling in for me, and he will be talking with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk about your pet's health. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.